The following audio is from the weekly message at Summit Church in the upstate of South Carolina. More information is available at summitupstate.org.
My name is Nathan. I'm just a guy, which is great. We're going to be in Mark chapter 9. This morning, as we are continuing on in our journey, if you are newish, or if this is your first Sunday, there's a couple things that jokes that might be confusing, even as Brett was introducing me. One, I used to serve on the team here, and then back in the spring, the Lord made it really clear to my wife and I that I needed to step back from the team, from full-time vocational ministry in a pastoral, local, congregational setting, which led to and was a result of a lot of conversations. And in the midst of that, people were like, well, what are you going to do? And I was like, I don't even know. And so I spent a day with a plumber, and I was like, I don't think I want to do that. The plumber was a really, really great dude, and I was like, this is a great vocation. Also, I don't know. And then I spent a day on the manufacturing floor of a local manufacturing company, and I was like, I don't think this is me, but maybe because electric bills are still a thing, and my kids still eat food, so I gotta make money somewhere. And then I got to hang out with out of the kindness of a few of you, and I was like, I don't even know what I'm good at. I don't even know what people are willing to pay me to do. I realized I had very few life skills. I'm good at talking. That's it. Like, that's all I got. And listening. So letting other people talk and then me talking, and like that's my only life skill. And in the midst of that conversation, Southside Christian School just down the road said, we're actually looking for a guy that can talk and listen to other people talk. And I was like, that might be me. I don't know. And sure enough, like that's kind of the path that Lord provided. So they hired me for a third time, and it's a story for another day. And I'm holding the record, I think. And so in the midst of that journey, this was the fascinating piece. In the midst of that journey, is I would sit down with my friends or on the phone with my brother, or sit down with my dad. And then also a lot of you, and I would be like, they'd be like, so what are you doing? And I'm like, what are you looking at? And I'd be like, well, maybe this, I have no idea. And then when Southside started happening, they're like, so you're going to go work back at the school. And I'm like, yeah, but it's like a weird role. It's like director of discipleship, which is a weird role. And I'm 3 months into it, and I'm still like, it's still a weird role. Like, I love the job, but don't ask me what I do. I don't know. And so but in the midst of that, it's been fascinating to watch my friends, especially the guys, who, when they are listening to me, one of the things that they're trying to delineate in their mind, because they love me and they care about me, is the same thing that oftentimes in the midst of this journey, I have kind of like had to process through, which is like, okay, so you were a pastor, which in the socio world's culture of America, like they're somewhere, depending on who you are, how you view them. They have a spot. There's a respectability there. There's a position there. That's a known entity. And now you're going to a school. So is this a demotion? Is this a promotion? Like, should I be excited for you, or should I be grieving for you? Like, did you lose in this endeavor? And I'm going to put it this way because it's going to tie it to the text. Are you greater than or less than what you were before? Because if you're greater, I should be happy for you. If you're lesser, like, I'm sorry, I guess. I don't know. But you made these choices, so I don't know. And like, I love my friends, and they're trying to grapple this. And I've also, in the dark of night, been like, I don't know what I'm doing with my life. And there is this question, as I'm navel gazing for a second, there's this question that we have that is important to us of greatness matters. And I get that. And it matters deeply to me, even greatness in terms of position. And this is like brutal honesty. Like, I didn't want to go. One of the reasons I didn't want to go be a plumber is because people would look at me like, you're a plumber now. You've lost, I guess. Sorry to the plumbers in the room. It's a really important position. That's why we pay you really well. And so, but to the point, like we know in our mind, and right, wrong, or endeavor, like greatness matters deeply to us. Position matters. I see it, even my daughter, she started running cross country. She's already more athletic than me. And she's already doing more sports in middle school than me. And so she ran races. And after her first race, she said, I was like, you, she finishes the race and she's panting and she's drinking her water and she's looking around. She's like, did I not come in last? And I'm like, it's a good bar to have, girl. You have, for the genes that you have, this is you're aiming for the right spot. And we get it. Rank matters. And it's not just in America. In Korea, when I used to teach Korean students, they had, and I kid you not, I was teaching one day in class, and I asked someone, I was like, well, when's your birthday? And someone else answered the question that was not friends with that student. And I was like, how do you know their birthday? And they all started telling me, like, they know every single student in the school's birthday that's in their grade. And I was like, that's insane. Why? Why do you do that? Facebook's illegal here. Like, how do you even? And they said, we need to know everyone else's birthday because the pronouns we use for one another changes based on whether or not they're greater than us or lesser than us based on date. And you're like, that's crazy. That's their culture, because position and greatness matter. Nothing changes. And this is the question that as we approach this text today, is when you look at greatness, Jesus had a thought. Jesus had opinions. And as we approach this text, let's jump in chapter 9, verse 30. Jesus is going to challenge a lot of their presumptions about greatness. They went on from there, Mark chapter 9, verse 30. They went on from there and they passed through Galilee, and he did not want anyone to know, for he was kind of pulling his disciples aside, and he was saying to them, the Son of Man, which is Jesus' reference to himself in the third person, which is kind of cool, he said, the Son of Man is going to be delivered into the hands of men, and they will kill him. And when he is killed, after 3 days, he will rise. But they did not understand what he was saying, and they were afraid to ask him, which is kind of funny. Why? What's going on here in this first section? For context, what's been going on is there's been this pivot that has happened across the book of Mark, which kind of began with a conversation earlier in chapter 8, where Jesus asked them, who do you say that I am? Who do you think I am? And Peter says, I think you're the Christ. I think you're the Messiah. I think you're the chosen one that's been sent to deliver Israel. And Jesus is like, yeah, that's right. Also, I'm going to die now. And they're like, what? Because they, messiahs and kings and saviors, like if we were in the first century, the idea of messiah was very, very similar to the cultural moment that we have of like superheroes, where it's like there's going to be this individual that's going to save us from our oppression and from the villains and the bad guys. And this was the narrative that the Jews had for the Messiah. The Messiah is going to announce himself. There's going to be a great following, and he's going to show himself to be the Messiah, the hero, and then he's going to beat the bad guys. This is the narrative of every human hope and story, and the Jews were no different. What every Jewish Messiah narrative had in the first century was that the Messiah does not die, because dying is losing. The Messiahs, the people that claim to be Messiahs and then die, were obviously false Messiahs that did not fit into the narrative. It's kind of like going into, like a coach going into a really, really important game, and they're like, all right, guys, this is the big rivalry game, so this is what we're going to do. We are going to win, and then we're going to have a victory parade. And everyone's like, that's not how it works. I don't know. And that's why Peter, when Jesus first starts talking, he pulls him aside. He's like, is you don't do this. This is not, I'm going to explain to you how Messiahs work. And Jesus responded very bluntly. He said, get behind me, Satan. And so you can understand when Jesus revisits the topic of, I'm going to die, and then I'm going to rise again. No one was like, you ask first. No one was like voluntarily being like, I have questions, because that's not how it works. Because the last guy that went forward kind of got shot down in front of his friends. And so it's really awkward, and they don't know what to do with it. And this is absolutely what I love, because they had a vision for what a great plan and God's design for the kingdom was going to work. God's design for success in this world, the way the kingdom would break in, was we would start off small and insufficient, then we would get big crowds, and then we would do these things, and Jesus, and then you're going to win. That's God's design for my life, because if I've been told anything, it's that Jesus loves me and has a wonderful plan for my life. And if Jesus has a wonderful plan for my life, what's not in my plan for my life is death, for one. Losing. That's not in the cards. And some of us, I think it's safe to say all of us, we bear wounds and scars, and there are things on the calendar, or there are things in the medical report, or there are things in family where we're like, Lord, it's very, very easy for me to lose pretty tragically here. Like, there's no, I do not understand how this loss, how this pain, like, this is not one step forward, two steps back. This is one step forward, hole in the heart. How could you possibly be real and have this as your plan if we're bold enough? If we're bold enough, and if we're thinking, and if we care enough, and if we trust Jesus enough to ask him those questions. At some point in your life, if you haven't asked him those questions, don't be surprised, because you will. Like last spring for me. What in the world's going on? I was pretty confident this was the plan. It's not. What do we do? And people go a couple different ways here. One response, we're people that I love and I care about. Maybe this is you this morning. You look at God's plan and the sequence of events that have played out in your life, and you're like, I'm out. Because a loss this devastating, to lose this painfully, to fail so greatly, there is no way that I can continue to follow you if you are going to let me walk out this path that hurts this much. If it includes death, I'm out. And my friends, can I tell you something? Like, I get it and I understand it, even if I don't know or understand the particulars, but can you for a second consider the alternative? The alternative is your pain is still there. Listen to me. Your pain is still there. Getting rid of God and walking away from God does not actually medicate your pain. Instead, what does it do? It just leaves you alone without resurrection. Like, the gospel, even here as Jesus is talking, he's like, the way that Jesus is walking and the trajectory of his life is going to include an incredible amount of pain and loss. And he gets it, and he moves for it to identify and walk with it for our behalf. But in the context of eternity, this is what we have, and this is what he is also offering disciples and you. Yes, pain. Yes, loss. Also, he will rise again. Sometimes it's really tough. Because in the moment, in the middle of the story, when you are kind of at the peak of rising action in literary terms, you don't know what redemption looks like in that. And I don't. Yet this is what Jesus is inviting his disciples into. The greatness of his plan is not the greatness of his plan across all of human history, the greatness of his plan for his disciples, the greatness of his plan for my life, the greatness of his plan for you is not undone because it includes loss. In fact, the only way that I have found to understand loss and human pain and human suffering is in the absolute promise. As I look in the past and I see Jesus' track record, and as I experience the present and as I look to the future, the only way my loss makes any sense is in the context of his promise and his faithfulness and his potency to actually defeat death itself. Otherwise, all you have is pain. So yeah, the Son of Man is going to be delivered into the hands of men, and they will kill him. And when he is killed, after 3 days, he will rise. That's the promise. But they didn't understand. And this is what I love. In their understanding, in their lack of understanding, Jesus doesn't chew them out. He doesn't pull them aside and be like, guys, you're idiots. I literally just told you exactly what I'm going to be doing. There's no metaphors. There's no idioms. There's no similes. I literally am being as articulate as I possibly can. This is like a parent. Like, this is when I, as a parent, get frustrated. I'm like, I don't know. I can't help you. And Jesus does not get frustrated with them. He's just like, I am telling you. Okay, we're just going to keep going. And they came to Capernaum. And when he was in the house, he asked them, what were you discussing on the way? But they kept silent. Again, this is like, I feel this as a dad, like if as a parent, if you've ever had the experience of like listening in on your kid's conversation, then you walk in and you're like, hey guys, what were you talking about? And this like pin drop silence. Yeah, that's what's going on here. They kept silent, for on the way they had argued with one another about who was the greatest. Why? Why were they arguing that? Well, consider the context. Right before this story, you had Peter make this great confession. Jesus, you're the Messiah. Peter is the first of the disciples to actually make that audacious claim. And Jesus is like, you're right. Peter's like, I am the man. And then Jesus says what in the very same conversation? Get behind me, Satan. You're not the man. You're now as bad as you could possibly be. And then after that, what happens next? Well, they go, three of them, not all of them, three of them get to go with Jesus to meet characters like Elijah and Moses, like the superheroes of Israel. And they go on the mountain, they see Jesus transfigured, and they have this incredible experience. Not all the disciples, because you have the nine other disciples who are just trying desperately to cast out a demon, and they can't do it for the life of them. They're failing miserably, being humiliated in front of the crowds. And Jesus comes down with the three prestigious disciples, and they're like, ah, yeah, you guys. Guess what we got to do, though? And Jesus pulls them aside, uses it as a teaching moment, and now they're walking back to Capernaum. And what do you think the conversation is about? Little awkward. You guys need to get your act together. Well, Peter, Jesus called you Satan, so I'm winning. And like, it's really awkward. Like, the tension as you read this, I wasn't in the room, but I imagine I've been in rooms like this, it's palpable, and you're like, this is really, really awkward. They'd argued with one another about who is the greatest. And verse 35, Jesus looks at me, he's like, you morons, I'm the greatest, be quiet. No, he doesn't do that. He sits down and called the 12, and he said to them, if anyone would be first, he must be last of all and servant of all. Let's pause there. Because I do think it's important to note what Jesus did not say. What Jesus did not lead with is, kill your desire to be great. Like, everyone's wired a little bit different. Some of us, like, the desire to be great in however we might define that is really, really important. And I understand that. And Jesus, He doesn't attack them for wanting to be great. Because why? Like, it's fascinating as I was thinking through this and praying through this. Why? Because what does it mean to be great? Like, if you were to boil it down to its essence, what do we actually mean by greatness? I think it has to do with influence. I want my life to matter, y'all. Like, that's it. I want my life to have value. I want my life to have value in the place where I'm at. I want my place in people's relationships to actually affect the world around me, hopefully for good. But I want that. Jesus doesn't knock it. Instead, what he does is he says, y'all, that's the Southern translation. He says, friends, the way in which you understand greatness is false. It's not a little bit wrong. It's completely wrong. And man, this is so tough. Because everything in our world, and we have been conditioned from childhood to tether greatness with you matter, me mattering, you mattering. We judge the worth and the value of other human beings on this planet based on their merit. What have you accomplished? How many followers? How many subscribers? What's your position? What's your net worth? What neighborhood do you live in? We have different measurements. We use different measurements because we don't want to fall. We're like my daughter. I don't want to be last, right? And so if I'm going to be last in a certain category like height, I'm going to choose a different measurement, right? Like, that's what we want to do. And so, like, and Jesus looks at him. And he's like, what you think being first, having the final say, having the most authority in the room, of being the person that gets to make the shot, of being the person that overrides, of being the one that has the final say on the household budget, of being the one that has the final say in what goes on in the business, or being the one that has the final say in what happens on any stage, like, that is not greatness. And I was thinking about this, and I'm like, when I'm in spirited conversations with my wife, why do I need to win? Like, we've all been there, right? Like, you're in a spirited discussion, and it changes to where you're like, I am just engaging in a conversation to, like, I need to win this. Why? What changes? And I'll tell you, for me, it's because in that moment, I need to win, because if I lose, I am less than. The call, if anyone would be first, he must be last of all and servant of all. This is not just a nice cliche. This is the same word that gets translated as slave. Like, he is saying, what the one who is greatest is the one that loses, that sacrifices time, energy, resource, position, like the thing. You look at the other and you're like, what do you need? What is your good? What do you need for your flourishing, thriving in the context of all that God is doing in the world? And then you give and you lose for that person. You come underneath them to serve them that they might flourish. And Jesus says, the one that is doing that for everybody, they're winning. I'm the worst. I tell you, like, practically, and I ask my wife's permission to share this. One reason, one place in our life, in our marriage, where I watched Emily grapple with this in a unique way was she's brilliant. She's super, super confident. She's trained to be a music education person. She's directed shows. And then she had this this alien embody her body and then take over her life. And then she has to stay home. And the worst thing is, like, this little person could not even take care of themselves. And so she went from, like, this massive influence in the lives of so many kids to what? Literally just changing diapers and holding this little being for a full-time job. And she didn't even get paid for it. It's the worst. And so by our culture standard, and this is her, watching her process that, because we do, we tether our greatness with what we perceive to be position and influence in the world. And I watched her grapple with that. There was a weight to it. And you know what I did not help with? As she's like processing and looking to me at times for affirmation and value and like, hey, what you're doing really, really is significant for the least of these. I've caught myself as the jerk face husband doing what? Listen, you say this is tough, but like, listen, you don't even know the problems that I have. Like in the real world outside the four walls and like, you are a scumbag. Yes. This is so pertinent and close, and as I've been praying through this passage, it is tough for me to talk about because it is so close to the actual war that rages inside my own soul. He must be last of all and servant of all. And then he did this. He took a child and put him in the midst of them, and taking him in his arms, he said to them, whoever receives one such child in my name receives me, and whoever receives me receives not me, but him who sent me. Why a child? Because a child in the first century, more so than today, a child is without power, is without influence, is without economic means. Kids don't tip very well. And none of us are serving in the toddler room for networking purposes. That's his point. We are used to, we are conditioned to step into a room and leverage our voice and our resources. Who am I going to invest in? Why? Because there's kickback. There's always kickback. Chinese call it guanxi. It is relational weight that I'm going to serve you, invest in you, so that. And Jesus' whole point is, this is the big idea of the kingdom, of the system that God is putting in place in this world. It's not that power is evil. It is that if you want to be the first in power, it is measured first and foremost by losing for the one that will give you nothing in return. And so, man, I'm going to pause here. Parents, do not underestimate what we are teaching our kids around this. I was talking to a student. I'm going to give you two examples of students. One student, his dad was in ministry. And they went and they said, I asked them why they hated their dad. Because they said they hated their dad. I didn't lead with that. That would be weird. And the student said, I could never respect him because there was one night where I came into the room crying, and my dad was studying for a sermon. And he looked back at me and said, go to bed because I have something more important. I'm doing really important work. The kid's like, I'm out. Another young man. And I said, why do you hate your dad? Again, because they led with, I hate my dad. And he said, because my dad only shows up when I play football. He wants to see me play. We teach our kids when we give them, when we withhold affection, investment, and care for when it's convenient for us and not interfering with the important things that we're doing. We are teaching something about who God is, and we teach them a lie. And that's Jesus's point. His heart for this entire world, and also the reason we can actually do this, because we think at the end of the day, we think if I do this in the moment, if I'm walking into the lunchroom and I see the awkward person that has zero influence, if I go there, I can lose, and what will happen to me? Nathan, if I do this and if I actually live like this, I actually put myself at risk. If I am only spending and not thinking about the social manipulation in order to achieve my greatness, I do actually lose. There's stuff at risk, my position, my wealth, my security, my 401k, whatever. You're like, yeah, you lose. And if I lose, am I going to be okay? Yes. How do you know this? Because Jesus did that for you. Like, this isn't just Jesus making this stuff up. He's like, no. I was literally sitting next to the right hand of God the Father. And I came and I was born into a broken, destitute family. I lived as a foreigner and an immigrant, and then I came back and I was mocked and I was called the illegitimate son of a woman, and I was cast out, mocked, relentlessly attacked, and I'm gonna die for you. And you do not deserve it. You are the least. And Jesus is the greatest. And his greatness is not lessened one iota. Instead, we know it is only celebrated and glorified because of his sacrifice for the least. And he's looking at you and me, and he's like, this is the kingdom of God. And so how dare you and I set aside our time and investment and resources for the least, and we reserve them and we cling to them and we jockey for positions for our whatever mess of greatness we've conjured in our minds. We lose. Because we're safe and we're secure and we're loved and we're cherished because Jesus himself has defeated death. This kingdom is passing away. His kingdom is breaking in. Let's skip ahead. One chapter. Jesus would reiterate things because we're slow learners. In 10 verse 45, for even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Would you bow your head? In this moment, Spirit, I ask that you would crystallize in our minds the lies that we have believed about greatness. That you would crystallize in our mind the battle that we are fighting to be great. That person, that relationship, that name we're willing manipulate, use, abuse to protect ourselves. Lord, I ask that you would make that very clear. And I ask that you, for my brothers and sisters, make your grace, your power real. Take a moment. Take a moment in this place. hand it to him. Jesus, you are King. You suffered and you died and you defeated death. And you now sit as King. Lord, for my friends, my brothers and sisters that know you, that are part of the family, Lord, I ask that as we walk in these relationships, we would walk in the freedom of your work that is accomplished on our behalf, that we would be listeners to your Spirit in the very practical place of what it looks like to serve the least as we follow. Lord, I do. I also lift up those who are not of your kingdom that might be in this room. Those where they listen to this power structure and language of greatness, and it's incredibly appealing, but it's foreign. Lord, I ask that you would make their hearts new, that they might know you and what it is, what it feels like, the beauty and the joy of being absolutely weak and powerless to save oneself and to be held by you. Thank you for the hope that we have. In Jesus' name we pray and trust. Amen.
Thank you for joining for this week's message. Summit Upstate's mission is to give every man, woman, and child the repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel. We'd love to connect with you, so we invite you to reach out to us at summitupstate.org.